So I'll warn you right now, I'm going to tell a story some of you may have heard before. I'm also not going to dwell too much on Thomas, because, as I mentioned last week, nobody believed the first time they heard. The women that came to the tomb didn't believe. The disciples they told didn't believe. Jesus appeared among them. He had to show them the marks in his hands before they believed. So by the time we get to Thomas, he's really getting a bad rap for what everybody else was already doing anyway. When Jesus says, "Blessed are those who have not seen me and yet believe," he's talking about everybody else that they have to go out and reach. Imagine being told that it's everybody else that's going to be blessed. You need to focus outward. You need to focus on other people. He made an example of Thomas, but Thomas certainly was not in the wrong. So years ago, when I was in seminary, I was doing my field education. It's a year where you spend following the minister around, doing everything the minister does. And I was having a bad month. I'll tell you right now, it was February of 2009. Remember the housing crash? So I was having a really bad month. It was a terrible month. And that month, I realized that my husband and I were going to be divorcing. I realized that I was completely out of money, which meant that I couldn't finish my graduate degree in seminary, which I had already been working on for almost 2 years. I realized that I was going to have to move back in with my mother, even though I was a grown woman with children in my 30s. And I realized that all of my friends that I had made while I was in seminary that had children, who were all from other countries, because of the economic downturn, they had all lost their scholarships that allowed them to stay. And within 3 weeks, they all had to return to their home countries because they were out of money. And I lost my social group. I lost my support. I lost the other parents and kids that I had gotten to know. And this all happened in a period of about 3 weeks. So by the time I was going with that church to serve at a soup kitchen in Richmond, I was in a pretty bad mood. I was going to do my best to get through the day without having to talk to anybody or interact with anybody, because I had a dark cloud of light hovering over my head, and I was just done with the world. My whole world was crumbling, and I could not see a way out. So when we see this passage with the disciples, they're really a wreck. It's very brief. It's very, very brief. It says they were in a locked room together for fear of the Jews. That's all it says. They are on Easter evening. This is still the same day that the women went to the tomb. It's Sunday. Jesus died on Friday, and they don't know yet that he has come back alive, that he has risen. They have not heard that good news yet. They are still in mourning. They are still highly distressed. They are hiding in a locked room, and it's locked because they don't want the authorities to come find them. They just watched this whole scene go down with Jesus, and it is very likely that if they are caught and tried for the same reasons, they could be next. They're alone. They're missing one of their number. We don't know where Thomas is. Where's Thomas? Is Thomas just needing some time alone? Maybe he prefers to grieve privately. Maybe he's going to comfort Jesus' parents. Maybe he's just out and about. We don't know. Maybe he didn't make it back in time before they locked the door. We don't know why Thomas is not there. But we do know that even though Jesus commissioned them to go out and spread the good news, instead they are hiding in this room, wasting a lot of time when there's a lot of people out there that need compassion and that need help. So I'm at this soup kitchen, and people had brought snacks to share, you know what I mean? Because they'd all got their hours early to prepare the lunch. So they had brought snacks to share. Most of them were gone. And we reached a point where we still had about 45 minutes before everybody was going to come in before the soup kitchen opened. But lunch was pretty much done. And so people were just taking a break to get a cup of coffee and such. And as I was wiping down counters, this is how I kept myself busy, because if you're wiping down counters, you can focus down. You don't have to look up. You don't have to pretend like you can hear people. It was a great task for me. I could sit there and work out my aggression while not actually making eye contact with any other living human being. And while I was doing this, a woman approached me. that I did not know, who was one of the volunteers. And she said, excuse me, do you see that sticky bun up there, that cinnamon roll? And I looked up, and you know those things you get in the supermarket that are so sticky sweet? They're like in a clamshell plastic box, and they're covered in white frosting. You know what I'm talking about? They're like the size of a grapefruit. Yeah, there was one of those there. And she said, that looks really good, but I don't think I can eat the whole thing. Would you like to share it with me? And I mumbled some sort of excuse. I think I said something like, I'm on a diet and I have issues with sugar, and I mentioned gluten-free. I don't know why. I was just trying to end the conversation as quickly as possible so I could go back to angrily scrubbing my counter. And I scrubbed the other direction, you know what I mean? And in that moment, I received the Spirit. I heard a voice. You can take this for what it is. It happened. I heard a voice clear as day, clear as if someone was standing right next to me speaking into my ear. And it said, that woman, and it was not a friendly voice, I'll tell you that right now, that woman just asked you to break bread with her. You do it. That woman just asked you to break bread with her. You do it. Now, I don't know how God talks to y'all, but oftentimes for me, it's a drop kick. Boom, go do it. So the disciples are all in this room. And even though all the walls are solid, even though all the windows are closed, even though the door is locked, Jesus manages to break right in and appear in the midst of them. He appears right there, despite all of their barricades. Boom, right in the middle. And even though they are frightened, even though they're alone, even though they're highly, highly distressed, the first words out of his mouth are, peace be with you. Before he even shows them the holes in his hands, he says, peace be with you. How many people, when we greet each other in the morning, how many people say, peace be with you? Oh, really? How many people say, hey, good morning, it's good to see you? Uh-huh. How many say, what's up? No? See, the passing of the peace, despite my best efforts, has devolved into a simple greeting time. But sharing peace with one another, saying, I truly, truly hope that the peace that passes all understanding is within you right now. And I would like to help make that happen. Peace be with you. When we say namaste, the Holy One in me recognizes and honors the Holy One in you. It's very different. And that's the first thing he says to them. And it calms them down. Peace be with you. Amidst all that chaos, all that grief, all that distress, all that isolation, peace be with you. And he appears to comfort them. So this woman and I sat down and proceeded to eat this gigantic sticky bun. And we started chit-chatting, and it turns out we had a lot in common, actually. She had kids, I had kids. She had four kids, I had two kids. But we chit-chatted about that. Her kids were a little older than mine. She talked about how proud she was of them, that they were making it through college, that they had one of them was about to graduate high school, and they were going to be valedictorian of the high school. She was so proud of them. And she talked about, you know, what it was like. We sort of swapped some stories about, oh, you know, raising girls. Oh, you know what it's going to be like when yours turn teenagers. And I said, oh, I can already see it coming. And we chit-chatted like moms do about their children. I see the teenagers in the back there laughing. Y'all know what you know what I'm talking about, Taylor, don't you? You know what 13-year-old girls are like. Exactly. Yes. Yes, she does. So we had lots in common, and we're chit-chatting about this. We're chit-chatting about our families, and we're drinking our coffee together. And it surprised me. It wasn't as horrible as I thought it was going to be to interact with somebody. So the story tells us that 8 days later, the disciples are still in that room. They're still in that room. They're still hiding. But this time, Thomas has returned from wherever he was, and Thomas is with them. And Jesus appears again. Jesus appears again. Even though Thomas never prayed that we know of to Jesus, show me too. Appear, show me too. I want to see also, prove it to me. Jesus answers his prayer before he even asks it. He breaks through that barrier again. Peace be with you again. Sits with them again and talks personally with Thomas. He waits for Thomas. He comes back for Thomas. He doesn't forget Thomas. Even though Thomas maybe wasn't there at the same time all the rest of them were, he's not forgotten. When Jesus talks about searching for the lost sheep, he does it. So I'm talking with this woman, and I said, well, now how long have you been volunteering here? And she goes, oh, past several years. She says, I try to come 4 days a week to help serve lunch here. And I said, really? That's amazing. 4 times a week you come to help? She goes, oh, yeah, it's really important to me. I said, that's wonderful. And I said, and I know this is a pretty comprehensive service. They just serve lunch here, but they also serve dinner. And they also have an addiction treatment program, and they also have sort of a transitional housing program where if you're homeless, they'll give you transitional housing until you can get back on your feet and help you get into permanent housing. And she says, yeah, I was thinking of checking that out. And I said, really? When are you going to have the time to be working not only 4 days a week here, but then also help them with their transitional housing program? And she says, no. I wasn't going to help them with it. I was going to avail myself of their services. You see, I've been homeless for the past 2 years. I've been homeless for the past 2 years. So when Jesus gets there, it's so easy to focus on Thomas. It's so easy to focus on how Thomas failed or something. But I would like to take a moment to focus on what Jesus did for them when they were in that dark spot. When they were frightened, he says, peace be with you. When they were in a self-made prison, and they really were in a self-made prison, he broke right through those barriers and appeared right there with them. Was present with them. When one of them was forgotten and lost, he came back for them. And he talks to them. Not only does he say, peace be with you, he also says, receive the Spirit. And he breathes on them. Now, where have we seen this before? We've seen it in the book of Genesis, where God takes this shapeless, lifeless lump of clay and breathes life into it, the Spirit, the Ruach. And then he starts talking to them about forgiveness. He starts talking to them about taking forgiveness to other people, having the ability to forgive sins. As they're looking at all of the brokenness in the world, he talks to them about forgiveness and gives them peace. Because those two things go hand in hand. The more you forgive, the more peace you have. The more forgiveness you receive, the more peace you have, which allows you to forgive more, which allows you to spread more peace. And it works exponentially so long as you can get out of your locked prison and pass the word around. And they needed that Spirit. They needed those words. They needed the peace, and they needed the reminder that they had the ability to forgive. Talking about forgiving people's sins, they weren't going out to judge people and say, I'm gonna look at your entire life, dress you down, and decide what you may or may not be forgiven for. They were looking at all of the brokenness that had brought them to the place that they were, and they needed to let it go because they had important work they had to do, and they couldn't do it in the state that they were in. And so he breathes on them and breathes life into these lifeless beings. Because if you are frightened and isolated and distressed and grieving and alone and locked in a prison of your own making, you are truly human, but you are not truly alive. And he gave that back to them. And they call him Lord, which is interesting because we hear all the time, you can Google it, people that were dead on the table in a hospital saw the white light in front of them. And suddenly, they came back to life. Happens all the time. But when these people arise from the table, we don't say, I will follow you anywhere, Lord. We don't say, your path makes more sense than any other path I can see. Your call, your leadership is something that I can follow no matter who is in office in whatever country I may be in. There's a difference there. He gives that to them. He gives them a path to follow so that once they are over their grieving, they can go out and spread the word. So when this woman told me this, that she had been homeless for the past 2 years, keep in mind, she was volunteering during this time. She didn't sit around panhandling. She was actively working in a soup kitchen every day with four kids who were all in high school at the time. Sure, some of them were graduating now, but they had been in high school during this time. And I asked her, oh my goodness, my first thought was, how do you keep yourself safe? And she said, you know, it is only by the grace of God that I have been able to live in my car, that I have been able to stay with neighbors, with friends, with family members. Sometimes they were couch surfing for only a day in one spot, only a week in one spot. But somehow they had cobbled together 2 years, and her kids were graduating as valedictorian of the high school. I couldn't imagine how she did that. I said, how do you do that? My mind could not comprehend. This was bigger than my mind's ability to comprehend. And I asked her, how do you do this? How did you survive? Isn't that difficult? And she said, no. She said, I'm so filled with gratitude every single day. I praise the Lord every single day when I get up for all of the blessings that I have received in my life. Can you imagine being that filled with the Spirit in that kind of a situation? Well, she was. It is possible. I guarantee it. I saw it with my own eyes. I was a witness to the kind of gratitude and joy and God-filled spirit that a person can experience even in the most dire of circumstances. And it changed my perspective as to where I was in my life and what was possible for me. And instead of walking around with a big dark cloud over my head, I suddenly started counting my blessings. And I started trusting that all would be well. And I started trusting that God would find a way where I could not. I received the Spirit, and I realized in that moment when I was with her that Jesus was right there with me. Didn't look like what I thought Jesus would look like. Happened to be a homeless woman serving at a shelter, at a soup kitchen. But I guarantee you that was Him giving me the Spirit, breaking through my own self-made prison. Reminding me to forgive, reminding me to trust, and saying, peace be with you, it is possible. And I received that. So I invite you to receive the Spirit. It may not look like what you're expecting, but anytime we find ourselves frightened, alone, distressed, grieving, Jesus is right there with you. Jesus is with you before you even ask. That is the hope of the resurrection, that all is not lost, even when you think it is. New life will spring forth if you but open your eyes and open your hearts to receive, and then go right back out and share that peace which passes all understanding with other people. And that's exactly what we did. We got up, having broken bread one and one, and went and shared with 250 people. And it was a much larger communion than even that, because I had brought with me over 20 dozen cookies that had been made by the Sunday school at my church. And we all broke bread together, all of us together, even though we weren't in the same room together, we still broke bread together. And there was a peace that passed all understanding. Can I get an amen for that?